This is edition number 2023 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday the 26th of June, 2026. Hello, you are listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday the 25th of June 2026. My name is Barbara Calver and my fellow readers are
Ruth Harrison,
Clive McCombie
and Mary Beattie.
On the notice board today, this week the sun will rise around 4:30 and will set at about 20 minutes past nine.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes Mrs. Temple, who is putting Norfolk on the country's cheese map. We hear about a landmark full of wonder in King's Lynn, the June edition of My Music for You, and finally, we hear how Norfolk is protecting precious beech nesting birds this summer.
But we begin with the main news items, which include praise for a seaside town school, East Anglian Air Ambulance rated as outstanding, call for action over mobile phone networks, and does Sheringham need a bit of a spruce up? Let's start with those lead stories.
A seaside town school has been praised for its culture of care following an Ofsted report. Wells Next the Sea Primary and Nursery School on Polka Road achieved the expected standard status in 5 out of 6 areas. The report said the school has established an open culture where safeguarding is a clear priority. Praise was also given for improvements to attendance over the last 3 years, as well as its pupils who behave well overall. The broad and ambitious curriculum at the school was highlighted with recent refinements to reflect the mixed age classes and changing pupil numbers. Inspectors said that leaders make sure children in the early years have a positive start to learning and the school strives to meet the diverse and wide-ranging needs of its pupils. They added that personal development and well-being was at the heart of the school's work and highlighted the effective support for pupils with special educational needs and/or disabilities, SEND. However, inspectors mentioned that pupils do not achieve as well as they should and needed attention. The report said leaders should ensure that staff use assessment effectively to identify gaps in pupils' knowledge and understanding and make sure staff teach the curriculum consistently well. The school, part of the Wensum Trust, was visited by inspectors on April 28th. It reached the expected standard in attendance and behaviour, curriculum and teaching, early years, inclusion, as well as leadership and governance. Rachel Stralger, executive head teacher, said, "The report reflects the passion, commitment and care that staff and governors show to provide the very best provision for all pupils. We are so fortunate to be supported by an amazing community of parents, families and businesses, and together we share this success." You can read a full report of the inspection on the Ofsted website.
The East Anglian Air Ambulance Service, based in Norwich, has been rated outstanding. It received the highest possible rating from the Care Quality Commission following a recent inspection of its city base, which serves patients across the region. The Care Quality Commission praised the charity's culture of empathy, teamwork, and continuous improvement, and noted that staff showed exceptional compassion towards patients and their families. Victor Inyang, medical director at the ambulance service, said, "This outstanding rating is a powerful reflection of the dedication, professionalism and compassion shown by every member of our team. Day in, day out, our crews and charity staff go above and beyond to deliver the highest standard of care to our patients. Patients are at the heart of everything we do, and this recognition reinforces our commitment to providing the very best care when it matters most. The Care Quality Commission also commended the service for not only following but contributing to national guidelines, highlighting ongoing research into diagnosing brain bleeds and improving cardiac arrest management. The East Anglian Air Ambulance provides advanced critical care 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, by air and road. Its specialist teams deliver hospital-level treatment at the scene, including blood transfusions, pain relief, anaesthesia, and emergency surgery. Mr. In Yang said, "We are incredibly proud to serve the people of East Anglia. As a charity, our ability to deliver this life-saving service relies on the generous support of our communities, and we are deeply grateful for the part they play in making this possible."
Locals in Aylsham are calling for action from mobile phone networks, claiming that coverage is getting worse. They have started a petition online calling for a review of the existing infrastructure and investment in upgrades to guarantee better connections. They claim the phone companies have not done enough to improve their networks to keep pace with the town's growing population. Aylsham has been one of the fastest growing areas of Norfolk in recent years, with hundreds of new homes built. The petition calling has already attracted more than 200 signatures. It states, "This isn't just an issue of convenience. It affects productivity, safety, and the overall quality of life in our town." Michelle Cork started the petition and, on a Facebook post, asked people to share their concerns. Around 100 people have already responded. One said, "I have been waiting for an important call from hospital, and I am worried I won't be able to receive it as the signal is terrible." Another said she has concerns that her stepdaughter may not be able to contact her in an emergency. One local said her mother recently had a fall and she could not contact her. "She tried calling me and it cut off after I heard the word fall, and then I couldn't call back," she said. Steph Aquarone, Liberal Democrat MP for North Norfolk, has asked locals to voice concerns so that he can raise them with the government. "There is a lot of work still to be done," he said. "My goal is to make sure that North Norfolk residents are not disconnected. The signal being this bad is rarely alarming, and as well as safety concerns, it is very important for business and tourism growth and to be able to use a network." Locals had a virtual meeting with Mr. Aquarone on Monday, June the 22nd, to discuss the issue and how to proceed. A 24-year-old local said, "The phone signal seems to be totally unpredictable. 1 minute you have service in town, and the next it's a total black spot. It's ridiculous that in this day and age, a simple amenity like this isn't a given."
Shannocks have always been proud of their town and will tell you it is vastly superior to neighbouring Cromer. But some are starting to question whether Sheringham needs a bit of a spruce up. A lively discussion has sprung up on the town's community Facebook page, bemoaning it as run down and neglected. People have started taking photographs of features which need particular attention and are calling on the council to help tidy things up before the tourism season really kicks off. The discussion was started by Richard Farrow, who highlighted several areas of the seafront and the Lees Garden and Shelter. He said there are trip hazards and unsightly views. The post generated a strong response from members in the group who shared their own experiences and opinions about the town. One comment said, "It is sad to see our lovely Sheringham looking like this. Something needs to be done if we want to keep our visitors coming back." Several visitors in the town, which has 444 five-star reviews of the Blue Flag Beach on TripAdvisor, this week shared those concerns. Roger, a retiree from Derbyshire who has a second home in Sheringham, said, "There are certainly one or two bits which look tacky. The council should have a pot of money to spend on these things. They are charging second homeowners double. So what are they doing with all the spare money? I have asked the question, but haven't had an answer." Jason Brown, aged 39, who lives in Sheringham, said, "The town is looking a bit rough, as if it hadn't been looked after. The roads have got way worse, especially on the back roads. And whenever someone seems to do anything, it is a temporary fix. I agree with the comments made about the town. I think it could make a difference to tourists wanting to come back." Another local added, "The town itself does its best, but the railings rusting and the slabs cracking make the town look somewhat scruffy." The town still had its fans, though. One couple from Norwich, who often visit their son who lives in the town, said, "We love Sheringham. We think it's the nicest town on the North Norfolk coast." Sheringham Town Council initially said the seafront area was not its responsibility. Later, however, a spokesman said it was aware of residents' and visitors' concerns regarding the condition and appearance of certain areas of the town. "We share these concerns, particularly where there has been a noticeable deterioration in parts of the public realm," the spokesman added. "It is important to note that the areas highlighted fall under the responsibility of North Norfolk District Council."
A landmark anniversary of one of Norfolk's oldest piers is being celebrated with a new edition of a much-loved theatre tradition. The Cromer Pier Show will return for its 2026 season, running from June 27th to September 19th at the Pavilion Theatre. This year's show will mark the 125th anniversary of the pier and its long-standing tradition of seaside entertainment. Sean Garrett, General Manager at Cromer Pier, said, "We are incredibly proud to be flying the flag for British variety, especially in such a special anniversary year. Reaching 125 years of Cromer Pier is a huge milestone, and the Cromer Pier Show remains at the heart of that story, bringing people together through laughter, music, and unforgettable live performance. This year's show is a true celebration of everything that makes British seaside entertainment so unique. Produced by Open Wide Coastal, the Cromer Pier Show is the only full-season end-of-the-pier show in the world. Audiences can look forward to comedy, music, dance and visual spectacle. New cast members for 2026 include award-winning comedian Jack Gledow as host, vocalists Fern Duffy and James Hammond, aerialist Charlie Oakton and acrobatic juggler Jamie Double. A stellar lineup of guest acts will bring even more variety across the season, including Myra Dubois, Philip Lowen, comedy magician Martin Daniels, and versatile entertainer Kay Lowe. The show promises high production values, including an 8-meter video wall, bespoke costumes, and signature lighting design. With a runtime of around 2 hours and 30 minutes, including an interval, the production aims to deliver a full evening of classic variety entertainment. The show is also part of a larger celebration of Cromer Pier's 125th anniversary, highlighting its importance as both a tourist attraction and a cultural landmark.
It has given a lift to a Formula One star, crossed the Alps, and is close to a Norfolk family's heart. An Austin 7 is still turning heads in the county as it celebrates its 100th birthday on the road. David Wall is now in his mid-70s, but when he first set his sights on an Austin 7 at 14, He hardly could have imagined he would still be driving one half a century later. The retired, self-described General Dog's Body from Barton Turf bought the car at 28 from Dr. Philip Evans, who'd named it Hannibal after driving it over the Alps. He said, "As soon as I saw it, I knew it had everything I could ever want in a car." For 25 years, Mr. Wall and his wife Lynn used the car every day, whatever the weather. No matter hail, rain, blow or snow, we were in it. Despite its age, much of Hannibal remains original, with all its body panels just as they were when it first left the factory. In 2022, the Austin 7 even made an appearance at Silverstone, where it was chosen to drive Formula One star Fernando Alonso around the circuit ahead of the Grand Prix. Mr. Wall's son Stuart was behind the wheel, and Alonso later signed the car. The vehicle has played a central role in family life, with Mr. Wall's children having an annual photo taken in it for the first 20 years of their lives. He is also a long-standing member of the Norfolk Austin 7 Club, holding membership number 007, making him something of a local James Bond. Owning 8 Austin 7s in total, he says he has no single favourite, though Hannibal remains the oldest. In June 1976, Dr. Evans told the EDP he was confident the car could go on for another 50 years. "It'll go on forever, I'm sure." At that time, he'd driven this beloved vehicle to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, where he worked as an anatomist, and celebrated the 50th birthday of his Austin 7 in style.
Almost £2.5 million is going to be spent refurbishing Cromer Pierce Theatre, despite complaints that the seaside town is North Norfolk's favourite child when it comes to council spending. North Norfolk District Council, NNDC, voted through a plan to borrow the funding for a revamp of the theatre's auditorium. The decision to plough yet more money into the pier, which has received more than £5.5 million in funding since 2019, has reignited a well-worn row at the council over whether Cromer receives the lion's share of investment in the district. The allegation has become regular fixture at NNDC meetings, with opposition councillors representing towns including Fakenham and North Walsham arguing the Liberal Democrat leadership repeatedly overlooks their areas in favour of the tourism hotspot. Christopher Cushing, leader of the Conservative group and member for Fakenham North, said the council had not made a strong enough case for the pier spending. "I don't see that there is actually a compelling business case that has been presented to us to justify the benefits to the North Norfolk taxpayer." He argued the investment was a nice to have, not a need to have, and pointed out the money could instead have bought 8 average-priced homes in the district. The vote on Wednesday saw 17 councillors back the plan, while the rest of the chamber abstained rather than vote against it. Why does the council say it's needed? The council says the auditorium is the one part of the theatre that has never been modernised, despite recent work to refurbish the front and back of house areas. Officers argue it is now too cold in winter and too hot in summer for audiences, and that the building's poor insulation and outdated systems are becoming a barrier to ticket sales. Lucy Shires, the Liberal Democrat Cabinet Member for Finance, defended the spending. She pointed to the scale of the local tourism economy, which she said is worth an estimated £547 million a year to North Norfolk and supports nearly 9,000 jobs. A very small increase in tourism activity would offset the annual financing costs associated with this investment, she said. "Because when people come to the theatre, they simply don't just buy a ticket. They eat in our restaurants. They drink in our cafes and pubs. They stay in our accommodation. And they shop in our towns. They support local jobs, local businesses, and that spending circulates throughout our economy many times over. A refurbished Pavilion Theatre will continue to attract audiences, support jobs, sustain tourism, and protect a nationally significant heritage asset. The Council has also estimated that repairing the pier, which celebrated its 125th anniversary this month, would cost more than £80 million if it ever collapsed. What work is being done and when? The £2.4 million will fund new insulation to the roof, walls and floor, a replacement heating and cooling system, full electrical rewiring, a new fire detection system, an upgrading audio and lighting equipment. The original cast iron frame seating will also be removed, fully restored, and reinstalled. Work is expected to begin in January 2027, after the theatre's Christmas show, with the venue likely to remain closed around 3 months while the refurbishment takes place.
A new study has crowned North Norfolk as the independent coffee capital of the region. Research by SEO agency Dark Horse has revealed 92.3% of coffee shops in the area are independently owned, the highest percentage in the east of England. The study analysed food hygiene rating data across the nation's local authorities to find coffee shops which are independent, as opposed to being chains like Starbucks or Costa. Data shows that 92.3% of the area's 65 coffee shops are operating independently. Popular independent spots in the area include Byford's in Holt and White Horse Bakery in Holme next the sea. In second place is Malden, where 89.3% of coffee shops are independent, and just three belong to a chain. South Norfolk follows with 88.6%, with 31 of its 35 coffee shops independently owned. The ranking comes after Norwich was named as the best city for independent coffee in the UK. Norwich boasts an impressive 35.8 independent coffee shops per 100,000 people, and nearly three quarters of its cafes are not affiliated with chains.
Our next few news stories include Walcott Village Show, young people engage in decision making, cliff stabilisation work, and Stalham's Repair Cafe.
A village show will be held this summer, with competitions in photography, homegrown produce and arts and crafts. The Walcott Village Show will take place on Saturday, August 1st, and promises a creative and colourful day celebrating community talent. Sheila Mason, organiser of the event, said, "Almost anyone has a potential prize winner sitting in their photo files, growing in their garden, allotment or plotted indoors, and this is an excellent excuse to get baking, finish off that project in the craft room, tend to your vegetable patch, or even just nurture the tallest stinging nettle. Open to all ages and abilities, the show features categories in photography, flowers, vegetables, fruit, home produce, and arts and crafts. Entry details are available for free from July 1st outside Walcott-on-Sea Village Hall or via the Walcott-on-Sea Village Hall Facebook page. Entries will be accepted on the Friday evening and on the morning of the show at 50 pence per entry. Public viewing runs from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. and includes a display of Walcott Village history and a stall in support of Broadland First Responders.
Young people from two coastal villages in North Norfolk now have an opportunity to engage in local decision-making. Sea Pawling and Waxham Youth Council is made up of 8 young people from the local community and nurtures youngsters to play an active role in village life. Although in early stages, the group has already supported a weekend summer solstice event. The parish council said, "The establishment of the youth council is an exciting step for our community. We're delighted to see such enthusiasm from our young people and are proud of the commitment they've already shown. Their involvement in the summer solstice event is a fantastic example of how they're contributing positively to village life, and we look forward to supporting them as the youth council develops." The next official meeting of the youth council will take place on Monday, July 29th at 5:30 in C. Pauling Village Hall.
Cliff stabilisation work has started in Cromer in an effort to slow down ground movement on a vulnerable section of coastline. A short stretch of cliff near North Lodge Park has been cleared, ready for the installation of piling and stone-filled gabion baskets to support the slope. As part of the project, a section of the historic boundary wall by Cromer's Watch House is being temporarily dismantled to allow access. It will be reinstated once the work is complete. North Norfolk District Council said the main risk to the area is gradual mass movement of the ground, rather than the usual wave erosion at the base of the cliff. The council has a historic legal covenant on this frontage, dating back to when a predecessor authority bought North Norfolk Lodge Park and the adjoining beach area from a private owner before 1929. The covenant makes the authority responsible for maintaining the stability of the cliff front of the private property behind it. Councillor Tim Adams said, "We have a unique legal obligation to carry out the work, which does not exist elsewhere in the district, to my knowledge. The cliff is not impacted by marine or wave action, but will be gradually impacted by mass movement. It is a very slow process, and there are no real risks to property or access currently present." Councillor Jill Boyle said, "The works are going well, and once the stabilisation is finished, the grassed area in the park will be reinstated so that from the park side it will look as if nothing has happened."
The future of a historic steam locomotive has been secured as it prepares for a major overhaul. The 1957-built 76084 will be restored at the North Norfolk Railway's Weybourne Locomotive Works as part of a new agreement. The overhaul is expected to cost £400,000 and will take around 2 years. Once complete, the locomotive will operate on the Poppy Line for the duration of its next 10-year boiler certificate. Graham Hukins, General Manager of the North Norfolk Railway, said, "We are delighted to have reached this agreement with 76084 Limited. The locomotive is ideal for our line, has proved popular with passengers, and is a firm favourite with our locomotive crews. This will see her returned to steam and in regular use for years to come." The locomotive last operated in 2023, before its boiler certificate expired. Mel Rutter, Engineering Director for the 76084 Locomotive Company Limited, added, "We know the engine is in safe hands with the team at the North Norfolk Railway, and we look forward to working with them when the overhaul starts later this year." 76084 is a British Railways Standard 42-6-0, one of the last built at Horwich Works and mainly used for freight. After being withdrawn in the mid-1960s, it was saved from scrap in 1974 and returned to service in 2013 following a lengthy restoration. Of the 115 Standard 4 locomotives built, this one is among just 4 which survive today. The North Norfolk Railway, which celebrated its golden anniversary last year, is currently running daily services except Mondays and Fridays in June, September and October, and every day through July and August. It has 6 steam locomotives in service this summer, alongside special events and dining trains.
English rugby's 2 most capped players have joined forces at Gresham School in North Norfolk. The school has secured another major coup with the appointment of Dan Cole to its sports department from September. Cole, one of the most decorated tight-head props of his generation, will join the independent boarding and day school alongside former England teammate Ben Youngs, who is already head of performance sport. The pair, who also co-host the podcast For the Love of Rugby, are set to play a central role in developing the school's next generation of athletes. The 37-year-old Cole brings with him an exceptional playing career spanning more than 18 years. A stalwart of Leicester Tigers, Cole made over 340 appearances for the Premiership club and became renowned for his consistency and durability in one of rugby's most demanding positions. On the international stage, he earned 118 caps for England, making him the 2nd most capped men's player in the country's history. Only Youngs, with 127, has more. His career includes 3 Six Nations titles, appearances at 4 Rugby World Cups, and 2 tours with the British and Irish Lions. At Gresham's, Cole will support the school's Talented Athlete Development, TAD, programme, working closely with pupils across a range of sports. His role will include delivering technical coaching, leading strength and conditioning sessions, and providing guidance on areas such as nutrition and sports psychology. The appointment is also expected to enhance the school's ability to attract promising young athletes as it continues to strengthen its reputation for high-performance sport.
10 minutes in Morrison's car park is now enough to add about 100 miles of range to an electric car in Cromer. A new hub of 6 ultra-rapid chargers has been installed on Holt Road in the town, giving drivers enough juice for a Norwich round trip in the time it takes to pick up a loaf of bread. This comes as part of Motor Fuel Group, MFG, rolling out its network at 337 Morrison sites across the UK. Stephen Aquarone, MP for North Norfolk, said, "Making the switch to an electric vehicle should be easier wherever you live, and the recent investment by MFG in these new charging bays in Cromer is another step towards a cleaner, more connected North Norfolk. North Norfolk is leading the way by making the greener choice the easier choice." Martin Symes, EV Director at MFG, said, "Our Cromer site demonstrates MFG's commitment to deliver reliable, convenient, ultra-rapid EV charging facilities to communities nationwide."
A new act has been announced for one of Norfolk's biggest carnivals. OG Performance Horses will dazzle audiences with a new chariot racing show at Cromer Carnival this August. Famous for their thrilling live equine entertainment across the UK, the horses will also engage in stunt riding, precision routines, and trick performances. A spokesman for the carnival said, "With plenty of action, excitement, and audience engagement, this is a display guaranteed to captivate visitors of all ages. Whether you're a lifelong horse lover or simply looking for an exciting day out, this brand new attraction is one that you won't want to miss." A long-time highlight of the carnival, the world-famous RAF Red Arrows are set to return, and David Seamark, a sheep and arable farmer, is due to present his talented working sheepdogs as they engage with his flock. A craft fair will offer a selection of handmade items and gifts, creating a unique shopping experience for carnival attendees. The carnival week will be held from Saturday, August the 15th to Friday, August the 21st, with Carnival Day on Wednesday, August the 19th.
Locals in a North Norfolk town can soon have their broken items repaired for free. Stalham's first repair cafe is set to open its doors, with people invited to bring along any broken items and get them fixed. Repair cafes have become increasingly popular since the success of the well-loved show The Repair Shop. Toys, jewellery, clothes and tools are among popular items brought for repair. Stalham Baptist Church is hosting the event on July the 25th between 9:30 a.m. and 2 p.m. You are listening to edition number 2023 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday the 26th of June 2026. Still to come, we have the Mardler magazine supplement.
We turn now to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where Mrs. Temple is putting Norfolk on the country's cheese map. We hear about a landmark full of wonder in King's Lynn, the June edition of My Music for You. And finally, we hear how Norfolk is protecting precious beech nesting birds this summer.
Putting Norfolk on the country's cheese map, KL Magazine, June 2026. Catherine Temple's cheese-making career started in her kitchen with two plastic buckets, a gallon of milk and a library book. Now her delicious cheeses are some of Norfolk's best-known products. Catherine Temple is a busy woman. As well as being the brains behind Mrs. Temple's cheeses, which produces such famous artisan cheeses as Binham Blue and Coppice Cloud, she's also a qualified pharmacist, lecturer, trainer of nursing staff, and a much sought-after speaker. Cheese was probably the last thing on her mind when she went with her husband to live abroad, first to India, where she worked as a pharmacist in a country mission hospital, and then to Malawi, where she worked at the Tea Research Foundation of Central Africa. As the resident chemist, she researched the colour and flavour of tea and published her research to gain a PhD from the University of Surrey. "I'm not a doctor of medicine or pharmacy," she says with a twinkle in her eye. "I'm actually a doctor of why tea is brown." Catherine came from a farming background, her grandparents owning a small dairy farm in the Vale of Belvoir on the borders of Leicestershire, Nottinghamshire and Lincolnshire, where the milk they produced was used to make Stilton cheese. Her mother also made cheese in the farmhouse kitchen, but it was just for family consumption. Catherine went on to attend the University of Bradford and was sent to Norfolk as part of her pharmacy apprenticeship, where she met her husband Stephen. After living abroad for several years, they returned to the UK in 1998 and settled in Norfolk. Stephen's parents had bought the farm where they continue to live today in 1956, and the couple bought another 300 acres to add to the original land. Farm incomes were very pressured at the time, and markets were starting to change, so Catherine cast around for an opportunity to improve their income. Although she was also working as a pharmacist locum around Norfolk, she wanted to find a way of processing the milk they were producing on their dairy farm and realised that cheese might be a viable option. "Nobody was making cheese locally, apart from a vicar's wife who had four goats," she says, "so there wasn't a lot of competition." At the same time, she was writing up her research on tea and was commuting back and forth to the British Library, where she started looking at books on specialist cheese making. She learned that cheesemakers were having a conference the following day and travelled to Shrewsbury to meet some cheesemakers. I began to formulate a plan and put it into action, visiting other cheesemakers and collecting equipment, says Catherine. After about 2 years, production began, initially with Whiten, which was based on a Cambridgeshire white cheese recipe, similar to a traditional Fenland cheese. The first cheese, Whiten, was similar to feta, and was swiftly followed by Melton, a Norfolk melting cheese which was like mozzarella. I started off with just these two cheeses, explains Catherine. I didn't need any fancy equipment. In fact, all I had was two buckets and a stainless steel knife. Following the negative publicity generated by the cattle diseases prevalent at the time, Catherine decided to start pasteurising her cheeses, a practice she continues to do today. Catherine began by selling her cheeses at local farmers' markets as a way of spreading the word about her products. As her sales grew, she began to think about reducing food miles and decided, somewhat cheekily, to ask the owners of the refrigerated vans driving past her cottage whether they'd distribute her cheeses to local pubs and restaurants. You never know until you ask, she says, and I've still got 3 customers from those days who are my biggest distributors. Catherine's cheeses are all made with milk from her beautiful brown Swiss cows, who live contentedly on the farm. Although Catherine and Stephen started with Frisians, they switched to brown Swiss cows as they live happily on a Norfolk diet of grass, maize and lucerne clover, all of which are grown on their farm. She began her business by using 90 litres of milk on alternate Wednesdays and has built it up to 4 staff, processing 2,600 litres 3 days a week, 5 days in the run-up to Christmas. Last year, they made no less than 34 tonnes of cheeses, 21 of which were Bin and Blue, by far Catherine's bestseller. She now produces 7 different cheeses, from Bin and Blue and the soft, creamy Coppers Cloud to the delicious, hard and mature Walsingham. We're so gratified with how our products have been adopted into the food culture of Norfolk, says Catherine, and how our rapid growth and success have been linked with all the great eateries and farm shops along the Norfolk coast. We couldn't really ask for more.
A landmark full of wonder. KL Magazine, May 2026. Few buildings in King's Lynn command attention quite like the iconic Town Hall complex. Its flint and stone facade, ecclesiastical windows, and quiet sense of authority have shaped the town's identity for centuries. Step inside and that impression deepens. This is a place where civic life, ceremony, and community have unfolded for more than 800 years. A landmark that's adapted to each era while keeping its stories close. What we call the Town Hall is in fact 3 distinct buildings: the medieval Trinity Guild Hall, the 18th century jail, and the Victorian Town Hall. Together, they form one of Norfolk's most architecturally and historically significant civic complexes, each with its own character, its own atmosphere, and its own surprises. The Trinity Guildhall, the oldest of the 3 buildings. The Trinity Guildhall was rebuilt between 1421 and 1423, after a devastating fire destroyed its predecessor. Its facade is a striking blend of limestone and flint flushwork, reflecting the wealth and influence of the medieval merchants who once governed Lynn. Religion shaped their world, and the Guildhall's splendid 7-light window, reminiscent of a church, hints at the spiritual and civic power intertwined here. Beyond this impressive frontage lies the Stone Hall, the great medieval chamber at the heart of the Guildhall, and the oldest surviving civic place in the town. Austere yet atmospheric, its vaulted ceiling and dark panelling carry the weight of centuries of decision-making, feasting, and ceremony. The floor, which appears ancient, was laid in 1716 over the original brick undercroft vaulting. The entrance hall, added in 1624, carries the coat of arms of Elizabeth I, rescued from the long-lost Church of St. James, and above it, the arms of Charles II. During Cromwell's rule, the Commonwealth arms sat there instead, a reminder that even the walls have lived through political upheaval. The Assembly Room. In 1768, fashion and function reshaped the Guildhall. A grand assembly room was added, reducing the stone hall by 13 foot, but ushering in a new era of elegance. Where the stone hall is solemn, the assembly room is theatrical. Chandeliers shimmer overhead, portraits of national figures line the walls, and tall windows flood the space with light. This was a room designed for dancing, dining, and society. Gentlemen in powdered wigs, ladies in silk gowns, the hum of conversation and the clink of glassware would once have filled the air. The chandeliers, which cost a modest £135 when first installed, now gleam as priceless treasures. Across the doorway hangs the coat of arms of Queen Victoria, a detail many awestruck visitors miss. The card room. Beyond the assembly room lies the card room, a more intimate space where gentlemen once withdrew to smoke, drink, and play cards while the ladies remained in the ballroom. It later became the council chamber, a role reflected in its portraits of local notaries and national figures. Among them is Captain George Vancouver, the King's Lynn-born explorer who charted the Pacific Northwest with remarkable precision. Nearby hangs a portrait of Fanny Burney, the celebrated novelist and diarist whose sharp observations of Georgian society still resonate. Her father was an organist at the nearby Church of St. Margaret, and Burney herself once described Lynn as a place of high living rather than high thinking, a line that continues to raise a smile. The Old Jail House. Built in 1784, the jail is one of the most intriguing and unexpected elements of the complex. Its facade, modelled on Newgate Prison, leaves little doubt about its original purpose, though many visitors pass by without recognising its grim history. The jail stayed in use till 1866, after which it served as the town's police station until 1954. The superintendent lived on site, and the building's corridors once echoed with the daily routines of Victorian law enforcement. The Town Hall. Completed in 1895, the Victorian Town Hall was designed to harmonise with the medieval Guildhall, mirroring its flint flushwork and ecclesiastical window. By the late 19th century, the corporation had outgrown the older rooms, and increasing public attendance at council meetings required a larger, more modern space. Inside, the council chamber and its outer lobby are lined with portraits of former mayors. Hanging these is a tradition that continues today, although photographs have now replaced oil paintings. The mayor's parlour also remains in use, complete with the oversized chair presented to King Edward VII when he opened the grammar school in 1906. Returned to the town for the mayor's use, is one of the chamber's most distinctive features. The town hall complex is more than a collection of historic rooms. It's a living chronicle of King's Lynn itself. From medieval merchants to modern councillors, from prisoners in the jail to dancers in the assembly room, generations have passed through these spaces, leaving their mark in stone, glass, paint, and memory.
My music for you, June 2026. Once again, and quite unbelievably, we have passed the summer solstice, and, as with last year, my choices reflect the season, although I could not have anticipated the extreme temperatures that we are currently experiencing. My choices are topped and tailed by two German composers, and in the middle we have one French and one Russian. In the first place, it's Felix Mendelssohn's incidental music to the Shakespeare play A Midsummer Night's Dream. More particularly, it's the overture, which was written 16 years before Mendelssohn wrote the rest of the incidental music, which was a commission from King Frederick the William IV of Prussia. The overture was written as a concert overture, not associated at that time with any performance of the play. Finished in 1826, when Mendelssohn was just 17, it was premiered in Stettin in early 1827, when he was just 18. Its first London performance was in June 1829, with Mendelssohn conducting. It was in aid of the victims of the floods in Silesia. At the same concert, Mendelssohn was also the soloist in the premiere of Beethoven's Emperor Concerto. After the concert, the score for the overture was given to one Thomas Attwood, an English composer, for safekeeping. He left it in a cab. It was never recovered, and Mendelssohn rewrote it from memory. Following Felix, we have Claude Debussy and his symphonic poem L'après-midi d'une faune, or Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, inspired by a poem of the same name by Stefan Mellerin, one of Debussy's most famous works. It is said to mark a musical watershed. It is impressionist, and Pierre Boulez considered it to be the beginning of modern music. Scored for woodwind, brass, harp and strings, though called a prelude, it is a complete work. The poet disapproved of his poetry being used in this way until he heard the first performance. He then wrote to Debussy saying, "I have just come out of the concert, deeply moved. It's a marvel. I shake your hand admiringly." The main theme is followed by eight further sections, some of them secondary or new themes, and others related to the main theme. The whole work lasts about 10 minutes. From France, we travel to Russia for Tchaikovsky's The Seasons and the sixth movement, June. All 12 movements characterize the different months of the year in Russia. It was originally written for solo piano, but is sometimes heard in orchestral and other arrangements. Individual excerpts have always been popular as standalone pieces. Rachmaninoff loved the Troika of November, and this Barcarolle for June is enormously popular and appears in numerous arrangements. The whole work was incrementally composed during 1875, shortly after the premiere of his first piano concerto, and whilst he was completing his first ballet, Swan Lake. June was probably written between the 22nd of April and the 27th of May, 1875. In the Russian edition, there were poetic epigraphs chosen by the publisher. For June we find, "Let us go to the shore. There the waves will kiss our feet. With mysterious sadness, the stars will shine down on us." This is a very laid-back piece, and certainly reminiscent of a summer day in June, walking on a beach. It is very atmospheric. Finally, to the great German composer Ludwig van Beethoven and the fourth movement of his Pastoral Symphony No. 6. Marked allegro, the work was completed in 1808 and was performed alongside his Fifth Symphony in November 1808 at a four-hour concert. Beethoven was a lover of nature and spent a great deal of his time walking in the country. The symphony as a whole reflects delight at arriving in the countryside, the sounds of a brook, merry gatherings of country folk, a thunderstorm, shepherd songs, and thankful feelings after the storm. This allegro movement depicts thunder and storm. It is written in F minor and last between 2 and 3 minutes. There are no pauses between the last three movements, so it may be that if you don't have time to listen to the whole work, you might consider adding movements 3 and 5 to create a context for movement 4. That should only take between 11 and 21 minutes, depending on the tempi chosen by the conductor. As ever, I hope that my choices give you a sufficient variety and that some of the background I have provided is of interest. I will be with you next month as usual and hope that you have a happy and healthy time in the interim.
Protecting Norfolk's precious beech nesting birds this summer. KL Magazine, June. Known for its beautiful stretch of coastline and tranquil surroundings, Holm next the sea is one of Norfolk's best kept secrets. For beech nesting birds, Holm Dunes Nature Reserve provides the perfect home. With its open and dynamic coastal landscape, Norfolk is a desirable destination, whatever the time of year. In the summer particularly, swathes of people flock to the beaches and surrounding spots to enjoy the unique features that the county has to offer. Holm, while quieter than other beaches along the stretch of North Norfolk's area of outstanding natural beauty, can still get very busy on a hot sunny day, which can sometimes ruffle a few feathers with the local residents. These residents are some of England's most threatened birds, including the ringed plover, oyster catcher, and little tern, all of which nest on the ground. Official nesting season runs from the 1st of March to the 31st of August, though of course many birds start nesting before and after these dates, making Holm Dunes a vital stronghold over the spring and summer. As more and more of these protected species settle down to have their young and fledglings begin to explore the area, it is crucial that visitors are aware of their presence and are respectful towards their co-residents. These birds face a number of challenges during their time on the Norfolk coast, from rising sea levels and bad weather to predators such as gulls, birds of prey, foxes and stoats. Birds such as kestrels may also take the young fledglings, and that's all before potential human disturbance. Indeed, because the nesting birds, eggs and young chicks are camouflaged, it can be very difficult to spot them. This can lead to visitors and their dogs unintentionally treading on a nest without even realising they've done so. We have sadly seen a dramatic decline in numbers of these beautiful birds, says Rachel Murray, PR and Communications Manager for Norfolk Wildlife Trust. In the case of ringed plovers, the population in Norfolk has declined by a shocking 79% over the last 35 years, with just 123 pairs recorded in 2001. Oyster catcher numbers are also dropping, seeing them join the little tern on the amber list of conservation concern. Norfolk is an important county for nesting little terns, with almost half of the UK population, roughly 691 pairs, of these birds attempting to nest across the north and east of Norfolk in 2021. To help beech nesting bird populations to recover, organisations such as the Norfolk Wildlife Trust protect and monitor these avian tourists during their annual visit to our shores, with the support of volunteer beach wardens. Our beach wardens act as guardians to our vulnerable beech nesting birds, says Tori Backham, assistant warden at Holm Dunes. They support our wildlife by patrolling the beaches, helping the public to understand the importance of looking after these special species, as well as recording bird behaviour and nesting activity. ensuring the safety of homes nesting birds would not be possible without the support of people like Tori and devoted volunteers. If you see them on the beach, do go and say hello. They're always up for chat about the wildlife at home. We have already seen our first ring plovers and oyster catchers nesting on the beach here at home this year, says Tori. And we know they will soon be closely followed by little terns, who will be arriving here all the way from Africa. I can never contain my excitement when I find the first nest of the season. But this year is extra exciting, because we now have a band of volunteers to help us to protect these amazing little birds and give them a much better shot at survival. We want to give our special winged visitors the helping hand that they so desperately need to raise their young. If we are successful, new generations of ring plover, oyster catcher, and little tern can go on to have their own families, slowly helping to recover the species from recent declines. For any of you planning on visiting Holmdew's beach over the summer, you too can do your bit to help give these special birds enough space to raise their families. If you come across an area that is fenced off by rope and stake cordons, you may also see a notice, but this may not always be the case, be sure to keep a respectful distance. These areas have been segregated for nesting colonies to thrive. However, it is unlikely that fledglings will stay within the confines of the ropes, and as such, beachgoers should be wary of tiny chicks that may be feeding on the shorelines, taking care to keep any dogs under effective control. There can be no doubt that Norfolk is truly blessed when it comes to nature and wildlife. We must all strive to protect it as best as we can for generations to come.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you new editions each week. So please remember to turn the pouch and memory stick promptly. Make sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was Richard Preston. Editing and producing this issue was Manny Gomes. Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's
cheerio! Cheerio.